In polite society, the election of Donald Trump has produced something like a collective nervous breakdown. Along with gasps of astonishment, there's been an outpouring of anger and grief. The world that so many expected to continue indefinitely, slowly improving, has suddenly vanished. And despite what they'd like to believe, it's clear that it's not coming back. The pre-Trump status quo has gone forever. It's the lessons of Trump's victory that should concern us now, and in particular, what it means for the liberal inheritance that many of us seem to have taken for granted. There can be no doubt that these lessons will be hard to swallow. So hard, in fact, that I doubt whether the current generation of liberals is capable of learning them. For if there's a single message that comes out from the dramatic political events of the past months, it's that the liberal establishment that has framed policies and shaped opinion over the past decade and more did not understand the urgent needs of large numbers of their fellow citizens. There's incessant talk of the dangers of populism. But populism, at the present time, is a term liberals apply to the consequences of their own errors and folly. The threat to liberal values that exists today is largely a result of the attempt to apply an ultra-liberal ideology, which in pursuing an ideal model of society has lost sight of how most people actually want to live. Trump's rise is part of an upheaval in democratic politics that began in Britain. Brexit resembled Trump's victory in only one important respect. It showed large numbers of voters rejecting a continuation of the status quo. Since many other countries implemented policies of the kind against which a majority of voters were rebelling, it should have been clear that Brexit wasn't going to be a uniquely British upheaval. As Trump has now shown, it was just the first in a succession of political shocks that are on the way. The largest obstacle to understanding the present is the prevailing view of history. Many of us can't help thinking that the human story is one of gradual improvement, in which what has been gained in the past is carried on into the future. If you think like this, you'll expect continuing change, but no radical break in the pattern of events. Things will go on much as usual, possibly somewhat better than before. There'll be difficulties, even periods of regression, but in the long sweep of history, the achievements of previous generations will be passed on to the next and eventually exceeded. It's an idea that has inspired liberal idealists for generations. It's also one that has guided many seemingly hard-headed people, including some who've wielded enormous power. The outgoing American president, Barack Obama, has referred on many occasions to the arc of history, a movement leading to greater justice that could not in the end be thwarted. Just the other day, during a visit to Greece, Obama seemed to qualify this view when he told his audience, "History doesn't move in a straight line. Human progress occurred in a zigzag movement," he went on, "in which achievements in one area caused problems in others, as when automation and global free trade enabled goods to be produced with fewer workers, leaving those that remained less able to protect their interests." But Obama hadn't really given up the view of the world that Trump's victory has so violently disrupted. The departing president continued to assert that history has an overall direction, even if it sometimes moves in roundabout ways. Along with liberals everywhere, he still held to the faith, and it is an article of faith, not a factual observation, that history is a story of incremental improvement. The trouble is that human events aren't like this for very long. Gradual, step-by-step improvement isn't always possible. In fact, it occurs only in relatively rare intervals when history has paused, as it seemed to have done during the past 20 years. Progress of this incremental kind presupposes a background of institutions that most people trust or at least are ready to accept. Within stable institutions, conflicts can be worked out and compromises struck, resulting in a better quality of life. But history is regularly punctuated by discontinuities in which such institutions break down. whether because of irresponsibility on the part of those who rule them or an inability to cope with new challenges, they're rejected by most people and no longer able to function. In these conditions, much that has been built up in the past is abruptly swept away. That's what happened repeatedly during the last century, and it's what's happening at the present time. In Europe, the old demons of anti-Semitism and hatred of gay people and other minorities have re-emerged from the cellars in which they seemed to have been confined. In the US, many fear the reversal of the advances of past decades that they believe Trump's victory will bring. That these dangers are real is widely recognised. What's not being acknowledged is how the doctrinal liberalism that's been in charge for so much of the past couple of decades has created the situation in which liberal values are now at risk. Trump may have come to power through a campaign that exploited some of the worst racist stereotypes and fears. But as the left-wing Democratic nominee for the president, Bernie Sanders, has said, it's a mistake to demonize the millions who voted for Trump as racists. To do so is to demean the plight of people abandoned in America's rust belts, zones of despair where the only growth industry is the drug trade, and lifespans are spiraling down to levels comparable with those that prevailed in what used to be called the Third World. Nor can it be true that voting for Trump was simply an expression of misogyny. The men and women who found themselves trapped in these post-industrial wastelands had no reason to vote for an extension of the status quo, which for them is what Hillary Clinton embodied. Trump came to power because the economic policies adopted since the crash of 2007-08, and indeed since the end of the 90s, had reached a dead end. Lowering interest rates to zero and below may have prevented another Great Depression, but it didn't generate much growth. What it did was inflate the prices of stocks, bonds and property, a process that greatly benefited a few and left many more worse off. If young people found themselves unable to buy into the property market, older people found themselves unable to prepare for retirement. In these conditions, saving and productive investment became dysfunctional activities. Now that Trump has won, the old policy-making elites are saying that his policies are bound to fail. It's true that protecting declining industries from foreign competition can't, by itself, bring them back to health. Cancelling trade agreements and deporting illegal migrant workers may reduce pressure on wages, but it won't stop new technologies chipping away at jobs. Stimulating the American economy on the scale Trump plans, through tax cuts and increased federal spending, could engineer an astonishing American boom. But the medium-term effect could be rising inflation and spiking interest rates, and the impact on much of the rest of the world could be highly destabilizing. Moreover, there's nothing so far to suggest that the swamp of corruption in Washington is going to be drained, as Trump promised during his campaign. 4 or 8 years from now, the quagmire could be more dank and sodden than it was before he came to power. It might seem then that the abandoned and desperate voters who put Trump in power are set to be bitterly disappointed. Yet it would be wrong to think this is inevitable. The political landscape is changing fast, and there are signs that some Democrats in Congress may support Trump's ambitious plans for increased infrastructure spending. Even if little of this comes to fruition, American institutions are robust and resilient enough to withstand a period of popular disillusionment. A system of government that emerged stronger from Civil War, the Great Depression, two world wars, McCarthyism, and a series of disastrous foreign interventions is not going to be overturned by any passing administration. The situation is different on the European continent. As a look at the history of the last century will confirm, liberal democracy is far from being the European norm. The irony is that it's an extreme version of liberal ideology that has put liberal democracy in peril again in Europe. In addition to the negative side effects of unchecked globalization, Europe is locked into a dead end that is uniquely its own. The Byzantine institutions of the European Union, and above all, the rigid structures of the euro, make shifts of policy of the kind that are underway in the US, and in more muted form in Britain, next to impossible to implement, even if European elites showed any sign of wanting such changes, which they do not. Immune from democratic accountability, they refuse to respond to discontents that are being felt ever more intensely and widely. The disaffection of voters can only be expressed in an effective way at a national level, where the upheavals of the past months in Britain and the US look like being repeated. Starting with a constitutional referendum in Italy and a rerun of a cancelled presidential election in Austria, both to be held on December 4th, there will be elections in Holland, France and Germany over the coming year. If, as I suspect may prove to be the case, the EU comes undone as a result of this succession of votes, the blow Liberals will suffer will be greater than any so far. More than any governing system today, the EU is a quintessentially Liberal construction. The dream it serves is one that gives meaning to the lives of Liberals everywhere. Free movement of people and goods in a borderless world. But it's this very dream that makes the EU likely to founder. What we rightly cherish as liberal values, individual freedom and toleration of different faiths, aren't free-floating ideals that can be realised anywhere by an act of political will. They're fragile practices, fashioned with immense difficulty over many generations, which can survive only when the majority of people enjoy a decent measure of security in their everyday lives. Plainly, this is not how people feel in the EU today. On top of unprecedented levels of long-term unemployment in some countries, many are unhappy with the way the EU has dealt with the migrant crisis. Equal or greater numbers are worried by its inability to prevent or deter terrorism. Above all, voters are becoming convinced, not unreasonably in my view, that the EU is incapable of reforming itself. It's this situation that gives the far right its chance of power. Nothing is as yet certain. In the French elections in the spring of next year, Marine Le Pen could end up being blocked in the final stage. But equally, there's no certainty that she will fail. If you can't imagine her in the Élysée Palace, perhaps you should ask yourself a question. Are voters in France and the other European countries that will be having elections or referenda in the coming months so content with the status quo that they will opt for more of it? Or are many of them so unhappy with that status quo that they're ready to gamble on dangerous outsiders? After Trump's unnerving victory, Europe's electorates know they can inflict a similar shock on their rulers and on all who believe the future can only be a continuation of the recent past.